This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McLean. Now that the U.S. has confirmed the first death from coronavirus, the Trump administration is working to assure Americans that everything is under control. More from VOA's Arash Arabasadi.
Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar stressed the uncertainty of coronavirus spread while touting the administration's protective steps.
We don't know where this will go, that we will see more cases, that we will see continued community spreading in the United States as we're seeing around the world. We are actively working on a vaccine. We're going to work to protect the American people with every tool that we've got.
Vice President Mike Pence, whom Trump appointed to lead the government's response, urged Americans not to panic.
The average American does not need to go out and buy a mask. We have more than 40 million masks available today. We've contracted now with 3M to 35 million more masks per month will be produced, and we're also going to be working with other manufacturers.
President Trump has announced the U.S. is issuing more travel restrictions and warnings in an effort to help prevent the spread of the virus. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
Meanwhile, Italy Sunday reported a 50% jump in the number of new coronavirus cases in just one day, with at least 11 villages and towns in the north sealed off. Italy is the hardest hit European country. Less than 24 hours after the United States signed a landmark agreement with the Afghan Taliban in Doha, its implementation has already hit its first speed bump. Afghan President Ashraf Ghani announced in Kabul Sunday that his government has made no commitment to release thousands of Taliban prisoners, a precondition to the start of talks between Taliban and other Afghan factions. The U.S. Taliban deal sealed Saturday requires Afghan parties to the conflict to open direct negotiations on and around March 10th. This is VOA News. Turkey launched what deemed retaliatory airstrikes in Idlib, a sharp escalation of tensions with Syria. Reuters' Soraya Ali.
Turkey destroyed Syrian army air defense systems, wiped out more than 100 tanks and downed 2 planes. The attack was their response to last week's airstrike that killed 33 Turkish soldiers. Tensions in Syria have escalated between the Turkey-backed rebels and Russian-backed Syrian government forces in the country's northwest Idlib province. Increasing fears that the two regional powers will be brought into direct confrontation. Turkey's defense minister said they have no intention of facing Russia, but dubbed the mission a success.
That is Reuters' Soraya Ali reporting. The campaign of Pete Buttigieg announced Sunday evening he is dropping out of the Democratic presidential race after disappointing fourth-place finish in Saturday's South Carolina primary, in which he won no delegates. More from VOA's Marissa Melton.
Buttigieg is a military veteran and a former mayor of South Bend, Indiana. He won the Democratic caucuses in the neighboring state of Iowa early last month, and came in a strong second place in the New Hampshire primary that followed. But he failed to draw the interest of minority voters. Buttigieg announced his decision Sunday in a speech in South Bend.
We began this unlikely journey with a staff of 4 in a cramped office right here in South Bend, Indiana, right down Washington Street. No big email lists, no personal fortune. Hardly anybody knew my name, and even fewer could pronounce it.
There are 6 Democratic presidential candidates left to compete in this week's Super Tuesday contest, in which Democratic primaries are held simultaneously in 14 states. Marissa Melton, VOA News.
Meanwhile, former Vice President Joe Biden, the easy winner in South Carolina, faces an immediate new challenge from U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders in this week's Super Tuesday. A U.S. federal judge on Sunday ruled that Ken Cuccinelli, the acting director of U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, was unlawfully selected as acting director. The U.S. district judge said that Cuccinelli was not legally the first assistant to the director of the USCIS under the Federal Vacancies Reform Act and could not be named the acting director. According to court documents, on June 1st of 2019, Lee Francis Cisna, the then Senate-confirmed director, resigned, and according to his first assistant, the deputy director, Mark Cummins, was expected to automatically assume the post of acting director. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, the second day of March, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The man who declared himself the second president of Guinea-Bissau stepped down on Sunday.
We say that the army are with Umar Sisoko Embalo, and we are feeling that his life and the life of his family are not safe.
Mamadou Sebanda Baldé is the Guinea-Bissau political activist. The opposition in Guinea-Conakry will press on with its protest despite President Condé's postponing a controversial referendum. In Zimbabwe, 10 opposition members arrested Saturday are due in court today, Monday, and 11 members of Kenya's parliament defend their clandestine visits to Somalia.
We have serious security issues in northern Kenya, and therefore the purpose of the travel was to take an avenue whereby we can be able to talk to the highest office in the Republic of Somalia in order to see how best they can be able to help us along their borders.
Aden Ali Haji is a member of the Kenyan parliament. Pressure mounts on two Malawi opposition parties to form an alliance. And Nigeria launches public awareness campaign about coronavirus. Those stories and Samson Omale Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. In Guinea-Bissau, the man who declared himself the second president of the country has decided to step down. Cipriano Kassama declared himself president last Friday, but on Sunday, he announced he was stepping down because his life and the life of the country was in danger. Cipriano said he wants to continue to be Speaker of the Parliament. The Elections Commission declared Umaro Sisoko Embalo the winner of the December 29 runoff election. Guinea-Bissau political activist Mamadou Sebanda Baldé says now, with the whole security apparatus behind Umaro Sisoko Embalo, the country can return to some political normalcy.
The situation now is very clear that the army is with Umaro Sisoko Embalo, and the country is very kit, and the people are doing their life. So I think that tomorrow we'll have a new government, because we already have a prime minister, nominated by Sisoko.
So why did Mr. Cipriano, why did he step down?
He said that he don't feel if because all the army are with General Umar Sisoko Embalo, and he prefer to continue to be president of parliament, because his bodyguarding, security, everybody are supporting Umar Sisoko Embalo. Now the situation is really clear that the army are with Umar Sisoko Embalo.
Well, how come Cipriano declared himself president if he did not have the security?
He said that he not have the security. He said that he think that more important is the situation of the country. He don't want to be a part of the problem. So he said that he will continue as president of the parliament, because he think that the army are with Umar Sisoko Embalo, and we are feeling that his life and the life of his family are not safe.
What does this mean now for Guinea-Bissau, especially the political uncertainty in Guinea-Bissau? Will this resolve the political uncertainty or make it worse?
Well, I think that the army are all in the same side. The situation are going to be more calm, but we are expecting the international community what they will say, if they will accept this president, and if they will accept that this election will be the last election, because what PIGC are applying is to cancel the election, to do a new election. So I think that now everything are very more calm, because the army decide to be in the same side. So it's less than a problem for us.
So you are suggesting perhaps that the army, as long as they remain on one side, they support one president, the situation will be okay?
Yeah, because for us, everybody was afraid, because one day ago, we had two presidents, and probably we are thinking that if they have a support of the part of the army, it's very dangerous. I think that you can imagine that if Cipriano have a part of the army and Sisoko have a part of them, it will be very dangerous. But now we see that all the members of different part of the army, including security, civil security, police, and with Umar Sisoko and Bala.
Mamadou Sebanda Baldi is a Guinea-Bissau political activist. He was speaking with us from the capital, Bissau. In Guinea-Conakry, the National Front for the Defense of the Constitution, FNDC, says it will renew its nationwide protest this Thursday, March 5th, against any attempt by President Alpha Condé to have a referendum about a new constitution. This comes after President Condé announced Saturday that he was slightly postponing a constitutional referendum that was scheduled to take place yesterday, Sunday. FNDC member Faya Milimuno says President Conde bowed to domestic and international pressure.
The president, or Alpha Conde, understood that the country has been completely isolated. At this point, it's like we are alone on a different planet. And that's why he decided to postpone. So far, we don't know when. But what we know is, if the problem is about the register, it means that we don't need to postpone. It's not just postponing for 2 weeks or 3 weeks. We need to sit down and talk. Talk about how we're going to completely work on the register to the point that it can become consensual. Second, how we're going to go about organizing those legislative elections. And for us, Alpha Conde has abandoned that project of changing our constitution to allow him to have a daughter.
So you are willing to sit down with the government to discuss improving the voter register, but with a condition that the president should abandon changing the constitution for a third term?
Oh, yeah. I mean, for us, we put in place FNDC because we want to protect our constitution. Any constitution can be amended, but changing the whole constitution just because we want another term, we're not going to allow that, no matter what he does.
When would there be any other discussion on the way forward? Do you plan to hold any other discussion, and with whom?
From what we have here, from what we know, the ECOWAS leaders will be sending a delegation with some president. So when that delegation comes to Conakry, probably the first talks will happen. And from there, we will know how we're going to go about building peace in our country, at the same time protecting our constitution and saving what is at stake. We need democracy in this country. We are not fighting to have a king. We are fighting to have a democratic society in which everybody abides by the law.
Do you intend to continue your protest?
Yes, we're going to continue until that constitutional coup d'etat is away. So we have a plan to have some more demonstrations next week from Thursday, the 5th of March.
Faya Milimuno is a member of the opposition FNDC of Guinea. He was speaking with us from the capital, Conakry. In Zimbabwe, at least 10 members of the opposition Movement for Democratic Change, MDC, led by Nelson Chamisa, who were arrested on Saturday, are expected to appear in court today, Monday, to face charges of participating in gathering with intent to promote public violence. Police Senior Assistant Commissioner Paul Nyanti confirmed the arrest on Saturday, noting that the MDC youth were engaged in an orgy of violence that led to some political disturbances in Chitungweza. But MDC spokesperson Daniel Mulukele said the party youth were arrested outside the residence of local lawmaker Job Sikalas, where they were consulting with him on the current deteriorating economic and political situation in Zimbabwe.
I think, like other young people in the country, the youths yesterday were trying to get themselves organized, also discuss about the worsening situation in the country in terms of the economy and so on. And it's their constitutional right. But what we see in Zimbabwe today is that the ED-led regime is on a panic mode. They are no longer allowing youth, even or Zimbabweans in general, to gather in public. They don't want them to exercise their freedom of assembly, freedom of movement, freedom of association, freedom of expression. Practically, they've closed down all parts of democracy in this country. So we are very disappointed that some youths were arrested. They spent last night and tonight in custody, and tomorrow they'll appear in the magistrate court in the morning. So we are looking forward to supporting them in solidarity tomorrow. And Honorable Job Scala was called for questioning by the police, but he was not detained, he was not arrested. So he will be one of the lawyers who are expecting to support the youth in the morning at the magistrate court.
What are these youths facing in terms of charges?
It's not yet clear. We'll be able to know for sure tomorrow morning. Obviously, it will be disturbing the peace or the order or subversion or whatever. Those are the typical political crimes that we have seen under the ED regime, where we have a massive emphasis on persecution of politicians using prosecution of the courts. So the ED regime is abusing the courts to further its political agenda, and it's actually worse than Mugabe. When Mugabe was the president compared to now, things have dramatically moved from bad to worse. So there is nothing new about this dispensation except that it has made Mugabe look more like a Democrat.
And what prompted the police to actually arrest these youths?
That's what I'm saying, that their own private meetings as youths, and they were assembling to discuss the challenges they were facing, and as citizens of Zimbabwe, is their democratic right. But the police are not even allowing any citizens to gather in public spaces for whatever reason, because they are scared that as more Zimbabweans get into the streets, there is a risk that the ED regime will fall.
Daniel Mulukele is the spokesperson for the opposition MDC, led by Nelson Chamisa. You're speaking with Gift Dube of VOA Zimbabwe Service. Today is Monday, March 2nd, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Daybreak Africa time, 17 minutes past the hour. 11 members of Kenya's parliament have been defending what some have called their secret visit to Somalia. The parliamentarians, who hailed mostly from northeastern Kenya on the border with Somalia, were detained briefly by Kenyan authorities upon their arrival at Jomo Kenyatta International Airport. They had been accused of going to Somalia without first getting government clearance. Adan Ali Haji is a member of one of the 11 Kenyan parliamentarians.
We have serious security issues in northern Kenya, and in more particular in my constituency, where I come from, Mandera County, Wajir County, and part of Garissa County. We have serious issues in terms of infiltration of Al-Shabaab from Somalia into Kenya and along the border. Most of the teachers in northern Kenya have deserted schools. Many schools were closed. You know, the traffic and the roads are impassable as a result of insecurity in the area. Therefore, the purpose of the travel was to seek an avenue whereby we can be able to talk to the highest office in the Republic of Somalia in order to see how best they can be able to help us along their borders. We were looking for a way that they can deploy more troops into Somalia, into Gedo region, so that they can be able to support the infiltration of these terror groups into Kenya.
Upon your arrival, we understand that you were temporarily or momentarily detained at the airport. What do you make of that?
I think the meeting was successful. The president of Somalia, Farmajo, was really concerned that Gedo region is an area that's not manned by any forces per se, and he was really looking forward into a situation where regional government, the support by Kenya government, Ethiopian government, if they join hands, the issue of terror groups and Al-Shabaab will be a thing of the past.
The Kenyan authorities said that you travel without getting procedural government clearance. As a member of parliament, do you need clearance to visit Somalia?
It's not clearance per se that members of parliament will require to travel out of the country. It's a house procedure. It's on the standing order. It's not legally binding for us to pass through the Ministry of Foreign Affairs or any other ministry. It is through the speaker that we are supposed to notify, not say clearance, but to notify that we are traveling. And that has happened, I think. It's only that some few local politics has infiltrated the system and gave wrong impression on our good intentions to bring a lasting solution to the people of northern Kenya.
Some people are suggesting that maybe the Somali government is trying to push Kenya to stop supporting Jubaland leadership. I'm just looking at the politics.
For me, in my personal opinion, I don't see the need to support the regional government. Even Kenya, we have county governments, and it doesn't make any sense for a government to support a county government instead of supporting a federal government or a republic for that matter. Therefore, the issue of regional support or county government support by any other government, I think for me, is not neither here nor there. Therefore, I think the issue of country collaborating with another country, issue of, for example, now Al-Shabaab is becoming a global phenomenon, and it's really affecting affecting my people. It's affecting the people of northern Kenya, and it's affecting the people of Mandera. As we speak at the moment, there are people fugitives from Jubaland who are in Mandera, you know, courtesy of the government of Kenya. The people of Mandera are now living in fear, not only from Al-Shabaab, but the overflow of people from Jubaland.
Adan Ali Haji is a member of the Kenyan Parliament. He was speaking with us from the capital, Nairobi. In Malawi, both Lazarus Chikwera of the Malawi Congress Party and Vice President Saulos Chilima of the United Transformation Movement Party have confirmed that they are talking about a possible alliance ahead of the May 19th court order election. Vice President Chilima said Sunday that the two parties were still discussing the modalities. Makumbo Mutale is a Malawi governance commentator.
The need for them to go into an alliance, I think, has come mainly because of the court ruling that indicated one of the things that there has to be a 50% plus one system in the election of the president. So what is very clear is that none of the parties can achieve the 50% plus one in the presidential elections. This is why this issue around the alliances is being given some serious thought currently. And already with the ruling party, DPP, who have just a few days ago reached a deal with the United Democratic Front, you can already see that currently the pressure is so much on the Malawi Congress Party and the United Transformation Party, UTM, to actually come together in this alliance.
What do you suppose the Vice President, Mr. Chilima, and Mr. Chakwera, what do you suppose they are talking about? Is it about who should be the standard bearer of any possible alliance?
Yes, actually, what basically is going to come out in these discussions is the issue around who should be the torchbearer. Because I think this has been one of the contentious issues even prior to the last year's elections. Because take note that the issue around the two parties getting the alliance is not for the first time that we're hearing. Actually, before the last election, the elections that were nullified, there was also that talk. But I think one of the key things that came out very strong and which also led to the failure for them to be into an alliance was the issue of who should be the torchbearer. Definitely, each of the groups has been looking at their president as somebody who is most suitable. So even at the moment, one of the key issues that definitely would be so definitive in terms of determining whether they'll go for an alliance or not is whether they'll agree on who should be the torchbearer and who should be the running mate. However, there is some hope that perhaps because of the public pressure currently, as you're aware, the majority of Malawians did not want the current ruling DPP to be in power.
As you said, Mr. Chikwera came second in the last election, and Mr. Chilima has been vice president. Who do you think has the most lucrative card to play in the discussion about a possible alliance?
I would say that they're both critical. I think Chilima brings in the experience actually as being the vice president. But at the very same time, you're looking also at Lazarus Chakwera as someone who is leading a political party that has actually always been the fierce rival to the current ruling party.
Makumbo Mutale is a Malawi governance commentator. He was speaking with us from the capital, Lilongwe. Nigeria has confirmed its first case of the coronavirus. The country's health ministry says this makes Nigeria the first country in sub-Saharan Africa to record a case of the virus, which is blamed for more than 2,800 deaths worldwide. Timothy Obiesu reports from Abuja.
Nigerian health authorities say the patient is a man from Italy, a country hit hard by the virus, who works in Nigeria and returned from the Italian city of Milan to Nigeria's economic hub, Lagos, days ago. Nigeria's health minister, Emmanuel Osagie, says they are working with airline officials to identify other passengers who may have had contact with the infected patient in order to prevent further spread.
We are working with the airline. We are developing, we are going to get a manifest and then do a contact tracing and find all the people who are there. Usually you get their numbers and their addresses and monitor them. We're not going to assume that all of them are sick or fall sick, but and advise anyone who has any symptoms to report and be monitored.
The coronavirus was first reported in Wuhan, China in December. A recent assessment by the World Health Organization names Nigeria as one of 12 countries in Africa at high risk of the coronavirus threat because of a high level of travel and trade between Nigeria and China. A WHO representative at an Abuja public briefing, Dr. Clement Peter, admits the coronavirus issue is serious and challenging to contain.
Indeed, globally, the sounding from WHO is very clear. We don't know how this outbreak is going to go.
That was Timothy Obiesu reporting from Abuja, Nigeria. For Daybreak Africa Sports, here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good morning to you, James. We begin the sports with results from the CAF Champions League quarterfinal first leg matches played across four venues on the African continent this past weekend. Egyptian and Moroccan clubs recorded comfortable home wins as Zamalek of Egypt defeated defending champions Esperance of Tunisia 3-1, while Al Ahly beat South Africa's Mamelodi Sundowns 2-0 on Saturday. In Morocco, Raja Casablanca defeated TP Mazembe 2-0. Elsewhere, Wada Casablanca dismissed Etoile Sahel 2-0. In the CAF Confederations Cup, Al Masry drew 2-2 with RS Berkane in the first leg of the CAF Confederations Cup quarterfinals at the Suez Stadium, while expensively assembled Pyramids of Egypt made it 11 wins in 13 CAF matches this season by overwhelming previously unbeaten Zanaco of Zambia 3-0 in Lusaka. Enyimba of Nigeria, the only former African champions among the title contenders, failed to defend an early lead and had to settle for a 1-1 home draw with Horoya of Guinea. Staying with football news, the female national under 17 team of Ghana earned a 2-0 victory over Liberia in the first leg tie of the under 17 women's FIFA World Cup qualifiers on Sunday. Goals from Ophelia Sewa Amposa and Salamatu Abdullahi handed Ghana maximum points to keep their qualification hopes alive. Black Maidens coach is Baba Nuhu.
Not to say that Liberia wasn't a good side, but as compared to the kind of players that we have, I can say that technically and tactically we were ahead of them. For the day, we were better because we created a lot of chances and were able to get two goals out of those chances. So I can confidently say that for the day, we were ahead of Liberia.
Liberian coach Jenkins Doe, who saw off Niger in the face of the qualifiers on a 9-0 aggregate, admitted that the Ghanaians were better for his side.
Football is football. And with the performance, I'm satisfied. There's a new team that with the FA we are bringing out. Ghana been a long way. Whenever did I give credit to my players because, one, the strength that they had when using my players. For the second leg, I feel that I have to develop the main leg speed and strength to beat up. You see, our best will prove ourselves in Ghana. But never too late.
And now to athletics. Ethiopia's Kenenisa Bekele broke Mo Farah's course record as he won the London Half Marathon on Sunday in a time of 1 hour and 22 seconds. Kenenisa Bekele took 1 minute 18 seconds off the record set in 2019 by British distance great Mo Farah, who missed this year's edition with an Achilles injury. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. That is it for this Monday, March 2nd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Jimmy Cook, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing you a very, very good day.
Hello, everyone. Are you ready to hear the better of the best? Be it from the 80s, 90s, or 2020, some of the retentions are always remembered. You don't want to miss the best covers of all times. Tune in on March 4th to hear the most affectionate retentions of the biggest hits only on Water Crossings, The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, the United States, Britain and Norway are praising South Sudan for forming a unity government. Will the new government manage to end years of conflict that has killed thousands of people and displaced millions? South Sudan in transition on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.